Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:28 PM and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 17th, happy St. Patrick's Day to anyone who's celebrating. And we had a positive day in markets today with the Federal Reserve coming through with their meeting, and the conclusion was that there was just a couple of the voting members that thought that there might be an interest rate hike in sometime in 2023. So the Fed is still very much wedded to the idea that inflation is transitory. And they have some logical backup for that, because when we think about the dislocation we've had over the course of the last 12 months, it has really created some loopy figures in terms of economic data. And the year-over-year comparisons are going to be all over the place. Then, of course, we have the base effect. So we're going to have these extraordinarily large bumps back from very low levels, and it's going to look like a lot of inflation. And that's, of course, where the main argument is. There are certainly people who think that this is not simply transitory, that there will be a persistent move higher in inflation. And then there are others who think, and the Fed, of course, is among them, that says this is not going to last, that there are plenty of areas where there is ample room for further picking up of excess capacity. So that's certainly something that they're worried about. There are big portions of the economy that still have not opened back up. And that's particularly true of the leisure sector, travel sectors, and of course the hospitality sectors. So they're certainly going to pitch their angle in the belief that this is just a temporary pop upwards in inflation. But the big question, of course, then is, if you're a bond investor and you've seen the yield go from about 55 basis points to 165 in the course of only the last 6 or 7 months, will this trend persist, or is this a buying opportunity? Well, there's nothing has happened yet to really shake the conviction of the shorts. The USA has been much more aggressive on the fiscal front than anywhere else, and if anyone had been really dollar bullish, they would have had to believe that the sheer quantity of dollars that are being lent into existence would have to moderate, and there is just no chance of that in the short term. So then when we can think about inflation, well, we certainly have people that are rushing out to buy houses. I've seen lots of examples of that, where houses are disappearing from listings just a day or two after initially hitting the market. So there's certainly a feverish pace of home buying in some of the more desirable locations. Of course, then we can think about the bond yield as well in terms of that mortgage rates are rising, but we're not at the peak of interest in property. We're certainly at potentially a short-term peak, because interest rates have risen, and as we move further into the year and as vaccines get rolled out, then there will be an incentive for people to start listing homes more to capture that additional money. I already know of people that have accelerated their retirement plans because they see that the opportunity is now presenting itself to sell out of one area at a profit and then move to a cheaper area. And that's obviously something that will start to become more of a factor as we move further into the year and as vaccines get rolled out. So that should help to moderate the advance in property prices. But one thing that I think is quite relevant is the banking sector. There's been a lot of talk over the course of the last few months, and particularly the last 6 weeks, about the rotation into value. And the most common way of doing that has been the oil price, because oil has rebounded in an emphatic fashion, and the oil sector rallied really, really very impressively from December through to now. The sector doubled. So that's something that has attracted a lot of attention from investors. But the challenge is that there's plenty of oil around. A lot of this advance has been because of supply discipline on behalf of OPEC. And then we also have the fact that the rising interest rates and the very low, I think, activity in a number of places has resulted in a slowdown in drilling. But as the prices rise and as the vaccines get rolled out, well, then activity is going to pick back up. And it's not like the world is running out of oil, so that's an additional point. But something that is certainly not really talked about is that a lot of the oil companies are looking at a very considerable regulatory hurdle that is only growing higher by the day as politicians look increasingly towards taxing them into oblivion. When we think about the clear determination of the Europeans to continually bump up the price of carbon credits, then we have the fact that the Keystone Pipeline cancellation was one of the first things that President Biden did when he took office, and there is a clear incentive, or I guess motivation, for politicians to pioneer the evolution of carbon trading simply because it's another way of taxing corporations, and then it just creates this environment which is going to be increasingly difficult for energy companies. So they can recover, but they've already doubled. How quickly will they double again, which should be, I think, something that people should really be asking. And then the other big portion of the value sector is the banks, and they have been contending with an extraordinarily high regulatory burden for approximately 13 years. And now we can think about, is that likely to get higher? Are banks more likely to face higher regulation or easing regulation? And we can think about that in terms of the housing market, because a lot of the regulations that the banks faced as a result of the credit crisis revolved around lending and responsible lending and lower leverage ratios to ensure that the kind of excesses that existed prior to the global financial crisis would never be repeated. And the fallback risk, the thing that has been haunting people in terms of their decision making since 2009, has been the credit crisis. But I wonder how credible that's going to be in the next couple of years as people look back at what really scared them. Well, the credit crisis was in 2008 and the pandemic was in 2020. And I think a lot of people are going to look back on the pandemic as being the worst thing that could possibly have happened, and yet housing prices went up, and the entire financial system did not collapse. And that was surprising to a lot of people. And it would have been logical, based upon the experience from 2008, to think that that was going to happen. So as we look back on the most recent traumatic event, which was the pandemic, well, housing prices went up. And lending criteria are still rather high, and demands for a 20% deposit are still very common in the USA, and the banking sector has been fully recapitalized. Now, it's not equally true around the world. And then, obviously, if we look at European banks, they are recovering, but they have not been fully recapitalized. That's equally true of the UK. And then Australia and Canada, which have seen their housing markets really continue to do very well, their banks sidestepped the financial crisis. Now they're very levered to rising house prices, and the determination to have a 20% deposit has disappeared a long time ago for those markets. So I can't say that we have equal or equally valid reasons to think that we're not in a bubbly environment across the boards. But certainly as we look at the USA, there's a lot of desire for new homes. And then we can think about what happened with Lennar Corp today. They are going to split out their technology investments into a separate company and going to capitalize it with about $3 to $5 billion. So that's great news for the company, and the share popped on the upside, but it had nothing to do with building homes. And this is just a reflection of where we are in this market, that home builders have done better from investing in private equity ventures than they have from brick and mortar building. And it might be good for their businesses overall, but it's not particularly reflective of a healthy housing market. So there's obviously the potential here that we're going to see a significant building boom that will be politically motivated. What exactly the Biden administration, for example, does with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is probably going to inform a lot of views about how willing the U.S. government is going to be to fuel an additional housing boom. There are obviously large numbers of millennial people who are burdened with student debt, have not seen their earnings rise, and a lot of them have been out protesting on the streets over the course of the last 12 months, and they are unhappy with their lot in life. And the one thing that tends to quieten people down is to give them a mortgage. And that's exactly what happened in the 1970s. And I think it's quite likely that that's what we're going to have here as well. But in order to build all those houses and to enable people to, in fact, afford them, well, then bank leverage ratios are going to have to be addressed. And there will be easing of regulatory environments for home building and for mortgage lending. And there might still be risks, or there might still be regulations against collateralized mortgage obligations and types of debt instruments, or just how levered those types of investments can be. But it does look to be rather inevitable that regulatory burdens on banks are going to moderate, and we started to see the beginning of that during the pandemic, because governments basically gave money to the banks and told them to lend it, and they were preserved from taking a loss on it, and that's obviously very beneficial for banks. So when we look at the global banking sector, then we get an equally impressive chart, that we've had this incredible rebound. And we've also seen, it's not quite a doubling, so it has underperformed the energy market. But, of course, this is global banks. It's not simply that we're looking at the US. So there's a lot of Chinese banks and European banks in here as well. And it is coming up from the lower side of this evolving 13-year base formation. Well, if global banks can sustain a move above 1,000, well, then we're back in a bull market environment. So there's the clear potential that, yes, we've had a significant move in property over the course of the last decade, but it could potentially go further. And I think that's one of the primary points that Ray Dalio has been making, that putting money into solid investments is probably not a bad idea, because inflationary pressures could indeed break on the upside. But we're still at the beginning of the inflationary cycle. With the dollar weaker today, gold did extend its rebound, and it was up $13. Now we're due a $100 rebound. Every time the price has found support at the round numbers, it has bounced $100. Then in fact, it has occasionally bounced more than that. So we need to see it at least rebound back towards $1,800. It's at that level that shorts might be encouraged to come back into the market. So it's going to have to do better than that. It would really have to push up more than $150, so a bigger rally than we saw in December and January, push back above the trend mean. That would help to break the downtrend and confirm that this medium-term corrective phase is coming out the other end, and that the surprises will then be on the upside. So we're definitely getting some encouraging action, but we're just too early to conclude that this medium-term correction is in fact over. And the other point, of course, is that the downward dynamics have certainly been on the downside. And so far, the upward dynamics have been rather modest. So we certainly need to see more interest in gold coming through in order to clearly demonstrate that this corrective phase is in fact over. Now, then we think about what's going on in the wider bond markets. Well, the gilt, I think, is another one of the more interesting chart patterns, because it has clearly broken on the upside. And the Bank of England has broken with the ECB and said that they are not going to immediately arrest the advance in the yield. So the UK certainly doesn't want to go down the negative interest rate environment, and they are willing to tolerate some higher yields, at least for the moment. But of course, that is going to be 100% determined by just how well the economy continues to bounce back. With the willingness to ensure that there will be a positive yield, that should be generally positive for the pound. And of course, if the pound continues to rally, it may sap some of the interest in the international portion of the equity market. But the pound does look like it's in an uptrend overall, and we've had a pause around the psychological 140 level over the course of the last month, but it was in positive territory in here today, and the uptrend remains really quite consistent overall. Then when we think about the commodity related currencies, well, the Australian dollar was also in positive territory, and this has been a very orderly consolidation, and it does look like we're going to see a sustained move above that 80 cent level. If we flip it around and look at the dollar index, the dollar has now encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it was due a reversion to the mean. It's had it. It's looking increasingly likely that this rebound is in fact over. And this remains a bearish environment overall. So if the dollar is going to continue to trend lower, then that should be beneficial to the nominal price of domestic equities. It will also help to flatter the global returns for the international companies. And it will also help to encourage investors to look for an alternative. So the emerging markets ETF was in positive territory in here today, and this has also been a reasonably consistent trend overall, and an orderly consolidation. And it looks increasingly likely that emerging markets will be one of the primary destinations for flows as the dollar starts to come back down. The Nifty index has been one of the big beneficiaries of interest, but it was in negative territory now for four consecutive days. So far, this range has held, but it is somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean. But I do think that India is going to be one of the biggest beneficiaries of the emerging economic and geopolitical environment, and that it will be a buy on the dips for the foreseeable future. The Chinese market is still and will remain very politically oriented. So sovereign wealth funds in China are buying the stock market. They are trying to arrest the decline even as they move in and try to put manners on some of the most significant technology companies. They don't want to see an investor rout. the one thing that more than anything else that is helping to encourage investment in China is the stability of the bond market and the fact that you have positive real rates. So 3.25% is still substantially higher than you can get just about anywhere else. And with the dollar coming down, it flatters the returns for renminbi investors. The renminbi, however, is or has at least paused over the course of the last few months. Nobody wants a strong currency, but the US is willing to do more than everybody else at the moment to ensure that its currency is weaker. And that's beneficial too for Brazil. Brazil will more than likely have to raise interest rates in order to really confirm the support around the 6 level versus the dollar, but it was in positive territory in here today, and the Bovespa index was up about 2%. So it is clearly rebounding from the region of the trend mean. When we look at, for example, the Canadian Materials Index, well, Canada has got a large number of mines, particularly gold mines, make up a big percentage of the materials index in Canada, and it looks like it is clearly bouncing from the upper side of the base formation. The Canadian dollar also continues to be strengthening against the US dollar, and it's down to and below 1.25 right now. Property prices are accelerating higher in Canada, and the bond yield has also been trending higher. So that's also just another bond market where investors have been less willing to believe that inflation is under control, and the yield was in positive territory in here today. So we're definitely getting some evidence of markets heating up, particularly among the commodity producers. And of course, as we look at what global inflation will, anticipate what will get the focus of attention, well, industrial resources are obviously going to figure very highly in both the building of infrastructure as well as in renewable energy. So that's certainly beneficial for lithium and nickel and copper. But we are due consolidation, and I think we are getting some, particularly for the copper price. And that is probably going to then set us up with the next attractive entry opportunity. In fact, the trend mean is still really quite a ways off. So we might see some additional consolidation. But then the question is, if we are going to see stock markets do better, will we see more ebullient activity coming through in the renewables sector? Tesla remains an important lightning rod in terms of speculation, and it recouped its loss from yesterday in here today. And if interest rates are going to stay down, then that is beneficial for the most highly valued portions of the market. So the innovation sectors also continue to rebound from the region of their respective trend means. We heard from Samsung as well in here today that they are having difficulty meeting orders. And the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index also rebounded really quite impressively in here today. So there is certainly scope for further speculative interest coming through as a result of the determination by the Fed not to raise interest rates, regardless of what the potential is for inflation. If there is abundant cheap credit, then that should help the highly valued portion of the market to attract investor interest. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.